So we're on the bottom of Nun Tes, Amud Beis, about 8 lines up from the bottom. The Mishnah says, Velo Biktola, or Katla. And we're talking about different appendages that she wears on her garments. And again, the fear is that she might take them off in Rishus HaRabim. My Katla, what is this thing called Katla that she's not allowed to wear in Rishus HaRabim? And the Gemara answers, Minakta Pari. Now, what happens is that in those days, I don't know if it's very contemporary, but in those days, when they wore a bib, they made it into an ornament, a tachshit, which in and of itself, on a Doraisa level, if she wears this very beautiful bib that's studded with gold or whatever it might be around her neck, with a strap that loops into various fastens and loops, and then she can show it off to her friend. Why? Because it's a very beautiful ornamental bib, not like the bibs that we wear today. And the fear is that she would take it off in Rishus HaRabim and show it to her friend. Nizamim are called nose rings. Nizmei ha'af. And this excludes earrings. And Rashi and the Ran say that earrings are mutter, because basically her hair covering would cover that part of the ear where the earring was fastened to her ear, and it would be very complicated for her to take off the earring in Rishus HaRabim. So we're not choshesh that she'll take that off. But apparently a nose ring is easier to take off, and therefore it's prohibited. She might take it off and then carry it in Rishus HaRabim. Basically, the Rabbanan don't want anything out there in Rishus HaRabim that somebody would take off. Somebody would remove. Now we get to the sugya of rings. So by way of introduction, there are two categories of rings. There's a ring which is purely ornate, and it doesn't have what's called a chosam. And then there's a ring which was used back in the day to sign documents, and it had a chosam on it. A chosam is a seal, and every person had his own seal that indicated his signature. Now, the issue here about a woman going out with a ring on Shabbos has to do with a tachshit. Again, something beautiful, ornate, which she might be tempted to take off and show to a friend in Rishus HaRabim. That's called a tabasha ein oleha chosam. Now, if it has a chosam, then that's something that, generally speaking, the men used to wear, as we said before, only for purposes of signing documents. And our Mishnah tells us that midrabanan, included in the shvus that prohibits a woman from going out with jewelry that she might be tempted to take off in Rishus HaRabim, we have tabasha ein oleh chosam. And if she were to wear such a tabas in Rishus HaRabim, she would violate an isur d'rabbanon. And the Gemara now is medayik hayesh oleh chosam chayeves. If, on the other hand, it's what we call a signet ring, yesh oleh chosam, then she violates the malacha d'oraisa of carrying something in Rishus HaRabim, a masa. It's certainly not a tachshit, because she would never wear a tabas with a chosim on it as an ornate ring. Almalav tachshit hu. And she's chayev for carrying in Rishus HaRabim. Now, you might ask, well, she's not really carrying it in her hand, she's wearing it on her finger. But the answer is, that's the way you carry a ring. If the normal way of carrying a ring is by placing it on your finger, then that's called derech hotzah b'kach. And therefore, she would be in violation of meleches hotzah. Now, at this point, we have to introduce another question here, and that is, which we've many times introduced, the law of Tumah V'Tahara, which always pushes us back to a Masechta called Masechta Kelim, which goes through the various utensils to decide and determine which ones are susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. So now that we've decided, based on our Mishnah, that a ring with a chosam on it is not called a tachshit, Reminu, we're going to ask a question from the Mishnah in Kelim. And now we go through a short part of a Mishnah in Kelim. Tachshite nashim tmeim. The ornaments that a woman wears are susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. In other words, they are called Kelim, they're called utensils. The Mishnah lists those tachshitim which are mekabel tumah, and on the list we have katlaot, which we said before were chokers, if you remember, something that she wears around her neck. Nizamim, we said, were types of rings that she wore either in her nose. In this case, it could even include earrings, tabos are rings. And now the Mishnah tells us that tabas, this last category of a ring, it makes no difference bein sheyesh ol echosem, bein she'ein ol echosem, whether or not it has the chosem on it, it's mekabel tumah, v'nizmei ha'af. And now we have a case of nose rings. In any event, the Mishnah in its list of tachshitim has the case of yesh oleh chosem. So why does our Mishnah say yesh oleh chosem is not called a tachshit and she's in violation of carrying something? If it has a chosem, it has a signet. So the answer that Rabbi Zera offers, Amar Rabbi Zera's lokasha harab nechemia harab banan. And now we're going to learn in a braisa, machlokes between Rab Nechemya and Rabbanan. And once we get a grasp on this machlokes, we'll be able to figure out whether a tabash yesh al achosem is considered a tachshit. Now let's understand that this ring that has a tachshit, that has a chosam on it, is made up of A plus B. There's the ring itself, its metal substance, and then there's the chosam. The chosam itself was added as an addendum to the ring. So the manufacturer would make a ring with a place, an open space, where he would impress a chosam. Sometimes that chosam was made of wood, and that's called almog, as we'll see. So, Disanya, let's learn a braisa which records Machlok Shin Rab Nechemia and the Chachamim. He shall mateches, v'chosoma shall almog. Almog is a type of wood. So, the ring itself is made of metal, possibly gold, silver, and the signet, the chosem, is made of wood. Now here, at this point, we have to determine what is Ikar and what is Tafel. Do we look at the ring itself and say that that's primary, and here it's made of metal? Metal is Mekabel Tumah in this case. Or do we say that the main primary element in this ring is the Chosem, because functionally, that's what I need. I need to use the ring to sign a document. Now the chosem is made of almog in this case, made of wood. Now wood is not mekabel tumah in this case. That's called pshutei kli eitz, which means the Torah excludes tumah in the case of a wooden kli unless it has a receptacle to it. The chosem is a solid piece, it's not a receptacle, and therefore, insofar as it's wood, it would not be mekabel tumah. So how do we classify this complex ring that's made primarily of metal, which is mekabel tumah, but has a chosem, which is not mekabel tumah? How do we define it's like a schizophrenic ring? So the first Tana in our Mishnah, in our Braisa, says Tmeya, that we're not concerned about the Chosem. What we're really concerned is about the essence of the ring, and that's made of metal. In the flip side, Hishal Almo, they made a wooden ring, V'chosma Shel Matechas, and they added a signet that was made of metal. So now if we go with the principle that we started with, namely the ring is primarily defined by the substance of the ring without the chosem, then tahora. Then in this case, there's no possibility of tumah, because now the essence of the ring is it's a wooden ring, and wood is not makabel tumah. As we said before, it's pshute kliyetz. This is the opinion of the Rabbanon. Rabbi Nechemiah Metame, Rabbi Nechemiah says that even in this last case, where it's only the chosem that's made of metal, it's mekabel tumah, because the primary substance here is the chosem. Shohei Rav Nechemia Omer, b'tabas halech achar chosama, that the ikar of the tabas is the chosem. And in the case of a chosem, which is made of metal, the last case that we discussed, the ring will be mekabel tumah. If we go back to the reisha, and the ring is made of metal, but the chosem is made of wood, it would not be mekabel tumah, according to Rav Nechemia. And the Braisa continues with another mitzius, another case of bi'ol. Ol means that on the animal's back, neck, they would put two vertical pieces of wood with a horizontal piece of wood on top. And once again, which of the two is it, the vertical pieces on the right and the left, or the horizontal piece that connects them on top, is the ikar, is the primary element. And Rav Nechemia says that bi'ol, in the case of this yoke, halach achar simlonov. Simlonov are the two vertical poles that go up. They hold up the horizontal pole. And if those two poles are made of metal, then it will be Kabbalah's tumah. If they're made of wood, they would not be Mekabel tumah. Then the Braisa continues. And here we're on Daf Samach Omer Aleph. Bekolov, okay, the kolov is a kind of a board. And they used to knock nails into the board, and then they would hang various notifications on this on these nails. So again, what's the ikar and what's the tuffel? Do we look at the board, which may be made of wood, or do we look at the nails, which are made of metal? And this braisa establishes that halach achar masmerosov, which is interesting, that the nails, because that's where you're going to hang up whatever you want to hang, whatever notifications, that is the ikar. And therefore, in this case, it's the nails are made of metal, and it would be mekabel tumah. Bisulam, and again, you have two vertical sides, and then you have the horizontal rungs. Halach achar shlivosav. Everything depends upon the rungs. That's the function. You climb up the rungs. And if the rungs are made of metal, then it would be mekabel tumah. If they're made of wood, it's not mekabel tumah. B'arsi. Okay, arsi. I have here in the Masifta a very complicated diagram of what an arsi is. Basically, it's a kind of a scale. And the scale is made up of the following parts. You have the pole that goes from the bottom, from the floor up. And then you have another beam that goes horizontally on top of this pole. On the right side you have one scale, and on the other you have another scale. Now you place something down on a little platform, so to speak, a pan, and then you have chains that attach that platform to the beam on top that goes horizontal. And according to the first opinion, halach achar shalshalosav, everything depends upon these chains, because the chains actually hold on to the different pans on the right side and the left side, and that makes it possible to use it as a scale to weigh something. But chachamim omrim hakol holech achar maimit, everything depends upon the maimid, which is the vertical bar that goes from the top, bottom up to the top and holds everything together. But let's go back to our issue about a ring that has a chosam on it. According to the Rabbanon, a ring that has a chosam, we define the ring by the ring itself. Metal, makabel tumah. Wood, not makabel tumah. According to Rav Nechemi, everything depends upon the signet itself. And therefore, if we have some sort of a contradiction between our Mishnah, which implies that a signet ring is not called a tachshit, and we quoted a Mishnah in Kalim that a Tabas, Bein Sheyesh Alechosim, Bein Shein Alechosim is Mekabel Tuma, which means that it's considered a Takshit, then we can easily differentiate and say that our Mishnah that excludes a signet ring reflects the Shita of Rabbi Nechemya in a case where the signet ring is not called a Takshit, because let's say the signet itself is made of wood, whereas the Rabbanan say we're not going to look at the signet, we're going to look at the ring itself. If the ring itself is made of metal, it is called a tachshit, and it is mekabel tumah. Rava gives a different reconciliation. Litzdadim ktani. When we go back to the Mishnah in Kalim, we should interpret it as if it refers to two different cases. Yesh alech chosem, if it has a seal, then tachshit de'ish. When the Mishnah says in Kalim that it's mekabel tumah and it has the status of a tachshit, that's referring to a male, because it's generally speaking the male who has to sign the documents. But ein alech chosem, that also, according to the Mishnah, is likewise mekabel tumah. That's a case of tachshit de'isha. It's a case where a signet ring would not be considered a tachshit for a woman. She doesn't usually wear a signet ring. It's the men who wear them. But if there's no chosam on it, then on the contrary, for a man, it would not be a tachshit, because back in the day, I guess men didn't wear rings. But on the contrary, for a woman, it would be a tachshit. So that in reconciling the Mishnah in Kalim with our Mishnah here in Shabbos, according to Rava, our Mishnah in Shabbos is referring to a woman, and therefore it all depends, the status of the ring will depend upon whether there's a chosam or not, and if there's a chosam, it's not a tachshit, and therefore she's carrying the ring. And although the Mishnah in Kalim says that even a ring that has a chosam on it is called a tachshit, that's referring to a man. Now Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak offers a third reconciliation. Tuma Shabbos Karamis? You're asking a question based on an analogy between Tuma and Shabbos. That analogy is not acceptable. These are two different areas of halacha. And now Rav Nachman is going to introduce a drasha from a pasuk in the parasha of Tuma, because the Torah in the parasha of Tuma adds an extra word, And again, the parsha of Tumah for Kalim is at the end of Bamidbar with regard to the Milchemes Midjan, because all the utensils that were taken as booty from the Midianites, the Torah tells us, need vitayr. They need to be placed into the mikvah because they were makabel Tumah. Tumah, kli maisa amarachmona. When it comes to Tumah, the Torah adds the word masa. And that again is in the parsha of Klei Midjan, Milchemes Midjan. And what is the significance of Tumah regarding Klei Masa? Masa means that the Klei was manufactured for a specific purpose. Uklihu, in the case of a ring that has a chosim on it, it is a Klei Masa. Which means that although it's not a tachshit, but it has a function. So the the extra word masa here in the parasha of Tumah breaks new ground and expands the scope of your definition of a Kli that's susceptible for Kabbalah Tumah. Any Kli that has masa, that has some sort of a function, and in this case it was fashioned for the function of a signet ring, that's called a Kli. Hence, it's Mekabel Tumah. But in Shabbos, we have a whole different criterion. We want to know if it's a Takshit, or is it not a Takshit. If it's not a Takshit, it's called a Masui, and you're carrying it. Mishu Masui, Yom Rachmono. Ein Olech Chosam. If it's a pure, beautiful gold ring, for example, and it has no signet on it, that's called a Takshit. Yesh Olech Chosam. But if it has a signet on it, that's not called a takshit, and therefore it's called a masui. And if you carry it, you violate meleches hotzah. Now, again, there's a long discussion here in Rishonim, which I don't know if we'll have time for, as to whether or not Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is reflecting the shita of Rav Nechemia that we spoke about before, or perhaps both Rav Nechemia and the Chachamim. But the basic premise of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is that you cannot classify a ring that's used for the function of signing documents as an ornamental ring. It is not a takshit. Hence it becomes a masui. Now Rabotai, we go back to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah discusses pins. The Mishnah says, Lo b'machat she'eino nekuva. A pin that's worn for ornamental purposes, not for sewing, does not have an eye. L'may chazya. Omer Rav Yosef. So again, in our time, you might expect a woman to take a pin and pierce it through her top garment. But in the Gemara's time, they use these pins for a different purpose. And what do you use it for? Amar Rav Yosef, Hoil v'isha oreges ba se'ara. She sort of weaves it into her hair, which means she wears a covering over her hair, and then there are some hairs that are not fit into that covering. They stray. And she weaves it together, holding on to those stray hairs with this pin. Now keep in mind, Rabosai, that if this pin would have an eye to it, which is called a nekev, that would be a sewing needle. And a sewing needle is called a masa. That would be carrying. And that would be a violation of Meleches Hotzah D'Oraisa. Here we're talking about a pin, a needle without an eye, which has a purpose. In our time, maybe a decorative purpose. In the time of Chazal, it was used to clip together our hair. Now it's very interesting that if this was decorative, and therefore the Rabbanan said she's not allowed to wear this in Rishus HaRabim, because lest she might take it off. Very interesting, because if she takes it off, then some of these stray hairs will be exposed. And we said over and over again that she would never expose her hair, and that's why her head coverings are mutter in Rishus HaRabbah. But I guess that since these are only stray hairs, maybe she would not be so embarrassed if she would remove this pin. Omale Abaye, Abaye turns to Rav Yosef, and he says, V'tehevi kibiris tahora. Now, biris is a kind of a band that a woman wore on the top, on her higher, the higher part of her leg, in order to tighten the stockings so that the stockings wouldn't fall off. And it, again, its status in Tara is not really relevant to us now, but Vitishtere, according to the argument of Abaye, we said with regard to Abiris that she's allowed to wear that in Rishus HaRabim, even though it's a band. And the answer is she wouldn't take off the band because the socks would fall off. And by equation, says Abaye, she would not want to take out this pin that holds onto her hairs, because then the hairs would come out. And therefore, the Gemara now offers another interpretation as to what is the problem and the status of this machat. El Tirgama Rav Ada Narsha, from a place called Narshash, Kamei de Rav Yosef, Hoil v'isha cholekes ba sa'ara. The purpose of this pin is to be used as a comb. And she said, a woman would like to part her hair, she uses as a comb to part her hair. Now the Gemara objects to this interpretation of machat sheina nekuva, because b'shabbos l'may chazya, you cannot call this a function on Shabbos, because on Shabbos she doesn't comb her hair. And once again, we're touching on a very profound issue here about hair combing on Shabbos. And are we afraid that when she combs her hair, parts her hair, she might rip out hairs from her head, which is a malacha of gozes? But then again, it would be a dover sheina miskaven, and we have a whole sugya at that. Omar Rava, therefore Rava wants to change the makeup of this so-called machat sheina nekuva. It can't just be a comb, but rather it's a tas shel zahav, yesha rosha. What happens is that at the end of this needle, and the needle now is like a, it's almost like a, if you want to call it a vertical holder, like we discussed before in the case of the scale, and on top of this needle is attached a horizontal bar or flat surface of gold. And this is called some sort of a tachshit. Why? Because the needle ends in a bar of gold. It was a very ornamental, beautiful piece of jewelry. Bechol, during the week, she would very often take it off and cholekes ba sa'ara. She would use it as a comb and part her hair. But b'Shabbos, what would she do? Minichasa keneged padachta. She would put the sharp end into her, or under her hat, and this bar of gold would stick out on her forehead. And you could see this, by the way, in the museum. You know, if you take a look at old Oriental dress, that's what they used to wear. They used to wear a piece of gold. It was like a square bar of gold that was on her forehead. And then it's a tachshit, and it's a cinch for her to just rip it off and show it to her friend, and therefore it's us. Lo yetzei ha'ish b'sandal ha'mesumar. Now, when I think of a sandal ha'mesumar, which is a shoe that's made with nails on the bottom, and these are very, very profound nails, I think, again, this is because of my background, I think of American baseball. or Canadian baseball. You know, the baseball players have these kinds of shoes. And this is prohibited on Shabbos. Now, why would a person go out in Rosh Hashanah and take off his shoes in the middle of Rosh Hashanah? So this is going to open up a whole sugya, which is entitled Sandal Misumar. Okay, it's a whole sugya. Why? What is the problem with the Sandal Misumar? And why is it prohibited on Shabbos? V'lo biyachid, a person's not allowed to wear one shoe without the other shoe. Bisman she'ein baraglo mako, unless he has some sort of an injury on one of his two feet. And then we can understand why he's wearing only one shoe. Again, we're not sure where he's wearing it, on the foot that has an injury or on the other foot. That's going to be a sugya. V'lo b'tefillin. We're not allowed to go into Rosh Hashanah wearing tefillin. And the reason for this is because our Mishnah reflects the Shita that Shabbos lavzman tefillin. And it doesn't have the status of a takshit. And therefore it's considered as if you're carrying the tefillin. V'lo b'kamia. And you're not allowed to have an amulet that was used to ward off certain diseases. Bizman she'eino min ha-mumcha, unless we can prove the efficacy of that kamia. And once again, Rabbo said it's going to be a gigantic sugya. V'lo b'shiryon. Okay, this is a kind of armor that was worn by the soldiers. V'lo b'kazda is also kind of part of the armor. Shiryon is something that was worn up front. And kazda is a helmet. Even in modern Hebrew, they use that word. And lo b'magafayim, these were special guards that would protect the knees for soldiers. And although you might say, well, that's beautiful, you know, to look like a soldier with all this armor on you, the helmet and the whole kit and caboodle, that's a takshit. But the answer is no, we don't wear armor. V'im yotza eino chayv chatos, but he's wearing it, and it is covering his body, it's even protecting his body, and therefore he's not chayv chatos. Okay, now we get to the sugya of sandal hamesumar, my time. What is the problem with wearing this nailed shoe? Amar Shmuel. Shalfei hagzera hayu. The Jews were running away from the Romans during the period of anti-Semitism when there were decrees against the Jews. And the Jewish lives were in danger. Vayunichboim b'ma'ara, they hid in a cave. The Amru, and they set up the following regulations. Hanichnas, anyone who wants to flee as a fugitive and hide here in the cave, Ikonis, let him come in. But Ayotze al Yetze, but let him not go out. Because if he goes out, then the enemy might spot him. And not only that, they had trackers who would look in the mud and they would be able to see the imprints of the feet. And they would follow that to the cave. And one time, nefach sandolo shel echad mehem, a person ran into the cave, but somehow his shoe was on backwards. And if his shoe was on backwards, then he would leave footprints that would appear as if he was coming out of the cave. Again, he was going into the cave to protect himself. But because his shoes, these kind of very nailed shoes, which make a very profound imprint in the ground, the footstep, they would turn the other way. So now, the trackers of the Romans would be able to see that people left this cave. And they would assume that that's where the Jews were. Kisvurim heim echad mehem yotza. Now, when they saw the fugitives who were hiding in the cave, they saw a backwards, if you follow what I mean, a footprint. They thought that somebody left the cave. And once somebody left the cave, they thought they were in deep trouble. Ra'u oivim. they were afraid of the worst, that the goyim, the enemies of the Jews, would follow them and find them. And now they're any minute they're coming to destroy us. And they went into a bahala. Dachaku zebazeh, the terrible tragedy. They pushed each other. The hargu zeh, they killed each other. Yosef imasha hargu b'mayoivim. This was more tragic than what the enemies did against the Jewish people. And the reason that this happened is because that individual who came into the cave was wearing these kinds of sandals. So the Rabbanan made a decree that we don't wear these sandals on Shabbos. Now, you're going to ask, why don't we initiate this decree even on a weekday? So that's going to come around the bend. But first, the Gemara gives a slightly different version of the story. Rabbi Eli ben Elazar Omer, b'ma'oro ha'yoshvim, the story went a different way. They were sitting in the cave, hiding from the Romans. V'shamu kol me'al ha'ma'oro. They heard some sort of noise. Maybe it was a bird, but they didn't know that. Kasvurim hayu shebo aleim oivim. They thought the goyim were now coming to capture. They were overwhelmed by panic. Dachaku zebazeh, they pushed each other. And apparently they kicked each other. V'hargu zeze yosem imasha hargu bema oivim. In other words, because they were wearing these, you know, shoes that had nails on them, they were able to kill each other. Again, they didn't want to kill each other deliberately. But in that state of panic, you know, people were kicking each other and they were, these nails on the bottom of the shoes were going into the bodies of one another. And this was a tragic event which the Chachamim wanted to, in a sense, put in history, put it in the annals of history. And therefore they enacted this takana, no wearing of those shoes on Shabbos. Rami Bar Yechezkel Amar, he has a slightly different version of the incident. The Beis HaKnesset HaYoshvim, the fugitives were hiding in a synagogue. V'shamu kol me'achorei Beis HaKnesset, once again, they heard a noise. Kasmur ma'yishabo aleim oivim, they thought the enemies were coming to attack them. Dachaku zeba zeva hargu zeze yosem imasha hargu bema oivim. Okay, we have three different versions, but the bottom line is that the tragic incident was in one way or another connected to these kind of shoes, which we call a sandal hamisumar. Is Biosa Shah, when this tragedy took place, Amru, they declared, Al Yetzei Adam Bisandal Hamisumar. Because this would remind us of that terrible tragedy. Ihachi, if you don't want to remind you of the tragedy, b'chol nami litzar, we should just completely forbid the wearing of these kinds of shoes. And the Gemara answers, Maisa ki havi b'Shabbos hava. The actual occurrence took place on Shabbos. And the Rabbanan did not want to get us depressed by remembering that incident. And the factors of the incident, the various nuances of the original catastrophe, if they would be duplicated, would remind us of that event. So what factors, if they would be duplicated, would remind us of that tragedy? Number one would be the shoes, and number two would be the Shabbos, because it took place on Shabbos. So Gemara says, B'yontif lishtere. If that be the case, if you need something that specifically reminds you, it's so identical to the original catastrophe, then it took place on Shabbos. Alama Tnan, why do we have in a Mishnah at the end of in the middle of Masechta Beitza, and here we're turning to Daf Samach Amid Beis, is Mishalchim Kalim B'yontif? We're allowed to send gifts on Yontif of Kalim if those Kalim are necessary for the purpose of use by the recipient. Bein Tfurim, Bein She'enom Tfurim. And this has to do with the fact that if they are already tfurim, they are complete garments, then the recipient could wear them. And the chiddush of the Mishnah is, even if they're unsewn garments, you can use them as a cloth. You could wrap yourself around, you could sit on them, and it's functional on Yontif. Avolo sandal amisumar, that's not functional, because a sandal amisumar is prohibited even on yontiv. Velo minal she'eno tofur be yontiv. If the shoe is not sewn up, then it doesn't have any function, it cannot be used. But we see clearly that there's an iser of wearing this sandal misuber even on yontif. Why so? So the Gemara tries to show at this point a very common denominator between Shabbos and yontif. B'Shabbos, my timer. Why did the Chachamim say that by wearing these shoes on Shabbos you'll remind yourself of that tragedy? And the Ika Kinufya, because just like at the time of the catastrophe, the Jews were together in a gathering of Jews, whether it was in the cave or whether it was in the synagogue. And so too on Shabbos, we gather together in the synagogue. So that's another additional factor that leads me to remind us of the original catastrophe is Biyontif Nami Ika Knufya. Just like on Shabbos we gather together for davening, for Kriyas HaTorah, for learning, so to on Yontif we do the same. So the Gemara now assumes that Yontif is not Shabbos, but the reason why it's included in the Isur, in the Gzera, is because of this element of Knufya. So the Gemara immediately asks, Tainis Tzibur Ika Knufya Litzar. When we declare a public fast day for an impending doom, chas v'sholom, then it should be prohibited. Why? Because now we have kinufya, the tainis tzibur, and the Rambam codifies this in Hilchas Tainios, require that we gather together in the synagogue, fasting as a community, praying, reading the Torah, etc. So we have that element of kinufya, that should remind us of the tragedy that took place by kinufya in a gathering of people. So the Gemara answers, "Ma'isa ki havi b'kinufya de isura haka kinufya de teira havi." The kinufya that we are specifying in order to remind us, again we're trying to avoid, but that would remind us of the catastrophe, is the kinufya of Shabbos. The kinufya of Shabbos is a day that is engendered with an Isur. We're not allowed to do malacha. But in the case that we gather on Tainis, that's a different kind of a gathering. That's for the purpose of tshuva, but it's not for the purpose of a day of commemorating a day of Isur Malacha. So here's where Shabbos and Yontif have a very strong common list of common denominators. Number one, they are both days of Kinufya. Number two, they are both days of Isura, of an Isur Malacha. Tainis, although it's a public fast day and has the element of Kinufya, but it's not similar to Shabbos and Yontif because it lacks the element of Isura. Ve'afilu l'Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva di'omar lo osru ela b'yardein u'bisfina u'kemaisa shehoya. Now we have another sad event that took place in Jewish history. I'm not going to compare it to the first catastrophe that we discussed, but there was an event in Jewish history where they were trying to get the Mechatos over to Yerushalayim. And Mechatos, which is a concoction from the Paraduma, is something that's very rare, very expensive, and very significant. And what happened was that when they transported the Mechatos, they took it across the Yarden, the Jordan River, in a boat. And later what happened was that a piece of Tomei Mess, of Basar Mess, somehow got connected to the boat, and the Mechatos and the Efer Paraduma became useless, because now they were Makabel Tumah. So the Rabbanon wanted to institute a decree so that anybody who crosses a body of water and here we have a machlok. So let's go with Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva. Rabbi Chanina ben Akiva says that the Isur here that the Rabbanan instituted to commemorate that event is limited to all the factors that remind us and duplicate the original incident. And the original incident took place in Yarden and over Sfina. That's called Kemaisa Shahaya. So now we're not allowed to transport similarly to the transportation that took place then, the incident that actually took place. And that means, number one, there's only one body of water included in this Isur, and it's only in a Sfina. So now you might ask, well, we see that according to Rabbi Chanina, when we want to commemorate an incident, it has to be exactly the same. You know, we're going to limit it to a body of water where the incident's the Jordan River and to a boat. So Gemara says, Hani mi li yardein deshani mi bishar naharos. You know, it's very difficult to compare other bodies of water to the Yarden. And therefore, the Yarden is very unique. Rashi says it's very wide, it's very deep, and therefore only a Yarden kind of, and we don't have anything similar to Yarden, so that's going to, but Avayantav Shabbos Ki Adodi Ninu, however, there's a certain similarity that we mentioned before about the Isur Malacha that is common to both Shabbos and Yontav. Tisnan, Ein Bein Yontav L'Shabbos Ela Ochel Nefesh Bilvad. So we see that almost in all cases, Yontav has the same status as Shabbos as far as Isur Malacha, and that's enough of a common denominator to satisfy even Rabbi Chanina and prohibit the wearing of these kinds of shoes, not only on Shabbos, but even on Yontif. Now, the sugya about the Yarden and the Sfina on Rabbi Chanina is in Masechta Chagiga, and the Chazal in that Gemara are quoted as saying that what kind of transportation is prohibited over the Yarden in a boat? Not any transportation. You know, you have a lot of different cargo that you could transport. But rather, back in the day when they had the Paraduma, they would not allow taking the Mechatas of the Paraduma in a boat over the Jordan River, because that would remind them of the original incident that happened way back in the day when the Mechatas and the Ephra Par became Tomei, in that very same circumstance. Now, when it comes to wearing these shoes on Shabbos or Yontav, which is prohibited, because it reminds us of the tragic incident, some of the Mepharshim want to say that this would upset our experience of Oneg Shabbos. If people see you wearing these sandals and they remember the recorded event, that tragedy in Jewish history, that's going to upset your state of Simcha and Oneg of Shabbos. If that be the case, we're not exactly sure why the Gemara had a Hava Mina to impose this on a Tainis Tzibur. Because a Tainis Tzibur is a day in which we commemorate various tragedies in Jewish history. And there's no mitzvah of simcha and an oneg. So that's a question that has to be analyzed. Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shmuel Lo Shanu El Lechazek Aval Inoy Mutar. When they manufactured these shoes that are prohibited by virtue of the enactment, they did so because they knocked in the nails that connected the bottom of the shoe with the sole for purpose of strengthening the shoe. It was structural. Aval Inoy Mutar. But if they added various nails for ornamental purposes, that's permissible. That would not be a shoe that would remind us of the original tragedy. V'kamalinoi. So at what point do you say that the nails were obviously only there to beautify this shoe? Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Chamesh Bazeh v'chamesh Bazeh. On each shoe, they would knock in five nails. Rabbi Hanina Amar Sheva Bazeh V'Sheva Bazeh, seven in each one of the sandals. Okay. Now again, we need something that indicates that the nails were added not for functional purposes, but rather for beautification. And how many nails can they put in and say that these nails are beautification? At some point, when you add too many nails, it becomes obvious that it's there to strengthen, which is prohibited. So what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Hanina are arguing about is, what's the maximum number of nails that we can still consider it for beautification? And if they're more than that number, whether it's five on each shoe or seven on each shoe, he adds a sixth or a seventh or an eighth or so forth, then at that point we assume he's just trying to strengthen the shoe and it's prohibited. Amalei Rabbi Yochanan l'Rav Shemen bar Abba Asber Loch, let me explain where the nails were placed. Lidi D, I would allow up to five nails to be considered ornate. Is two shtayim mikan, v'achas b'sar siyosof. In other words, they needed one nail to attach the strap to the sole of the shoe. And then they put two nails on the right side and two on the left, and that was considered beautiful. L'Rabbi Hanina, sholosh mikan, v'achas b'sar siyosof. So again, there were three on one side, three on the other, and then one nail that would attach the straps to the sole of the shoe. Meisvei, the Gemara has a kasha from a brisa. Sandal hanote. What happens if you have a lopsided shoe? In other words, there was some sort of malfunction or in the manufacturing process, or maybe something happened to the shoe as time went on. And what happens now is that the sole of the shoe is attached on one side, but it's sort of like not attached so well on the other side. The nails got loose. So as I said before, the sole looks like it's a lopsided attachment here. And now he's got to add extra nails in order to flatten it out and make it look like a decent shoe. So the Braisa quotes a Tanakama, which is Rabbi Nosson, and he says, Oselo Sheva. He's allowed to knock in seven nails. And that seems to support the Shita Rabbi Hanina, because if we're going to be matir seven nails, it must be that it's still considered ornate. Rebbe matir b'shloshesre. Rebbe says you can still maintain the beauty of the shoe, even if you add 13 nails. Again, the Gemara is going to have a problem with this. But Bishleim el Rabbi Hanina, who diomek Rabbi Nosson, el Rabbi Yochanan diomek Keman. At least in the case of Rabbi Hanina, who said seven nails, he could be standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Nosson. But the two possibilities, Rabbi Nosson and Rebbe, whether it's seven or 13, they both contradict Rabbi Yochanan's five. Rabbi Yochanan says beyond five nails, It's already considered a sandal on the sumar, and it's prohibited. Hudiyomai ki Rabbi Noroi, Desanya. So we're gonna establish that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rav Noroi. Rabbi Noroi Omer Chamesh Muta V'Sheva Osur. Again, the odd numbers, because you always need that one nail that makes it an odd number to tie down the straps. But in any event, we have here Rav Noroi who says five, and that's the maximum that they're going to allow. Amale Eifa l'Rabbi Bar Bachana, Atun Talmidei Rabbi Yochanan, Avidu ki Rabbi Yochanan, Anan Avdin ki Rabbi Hanina. He turns to the colleagues that are disciples of Rabbi Yochanan. He says, you can follow your Rebbe's rule. and therefore you're limited to five nails. But we follow the ruling of Rabbi Chanina, and we could allow even seven nails, and it's still considered a beautiful sandal, and it's not the same sandal that was enacted under the Isser. Boy minei Rav Huna, mei Rav Ashi. So Rav Huna had a question to Rav Ashi, Chamesh Mahu. What if he has five nails in each sandal? Is he allowed to wear that on Shabbos? Amole afilu sheva mutar. So Rav Ashi held like Rabbi Chanina, and seven were allowed. So Rav Huna says, pushing the envelope, teisha mahu. What about nine nails? Amole afilu shmone asur. In other words, you can't go beyond seven. Seven is the max. Boy minayahu ratzon, or ratzon is a person who makes shoes. May Rabbi Ami, tfaro mi bifnim mau. Can I make a shinui, make it a little different than the original shoe that was prohibited, by sewing it on the inside? Amale mutter, that's permissible, because that doesn't look like your classic kind of a nailed shoe. And he puts a piece of soft leather into the sandal and he sews it inside the shoe. He probably charged double for that, because now you have a shoe that has a piece of soft leather inside that's very comfortable. V'lo yadana mai tama, but I wasn't sure why Rav Ami gave me the heter. Amar Rav Ashi, v'lo yada mar mai tama, isn't it obvious? Kevin the tfaro mifnim, havile minol. Once he adds this piece of leather on the inside of the shoe, then it becomes a classic minol. It's no longer a sandal of misumar, it's a minol. A minol is something that we wear on Shabbos. The sandal gozu be rabbonon, the minol lo gozu be rabbonon. So if you have this kind of a sandal, and it's got, you know, more than five nails in it, or whatever, more than seven nails, it's prohibited. But a minol, a classic shoe that was made for comfort purposes, that's not included in the gzeira. Boy minei Rabbi Abba bar Zavda min Rabbi Abba bar Avina. So one Rabbi Abba asked another Rabbi Abba, aso kimin chlavus mahu. Again, we're looking for a shinui, where he makes the shoe in a different way. He shapes the nails like tongs to make them beautiful. So it's a different kind of a nail. And he changes the nail. He makes a semi-circular shape to the top head of the nail. Amalei mutter. Once again, it's not similar to the original shoe that was prohibited. It won't remind us of the tragic event that took place. Itmar nami omer Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yossi taught us, Asun kimin klavus mutter. If he makes it with the shape of you of these unique nails, you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Omer Rav Sheshes, chifo kulo b'masmeros. What happens if he covers the entire sole of the sandal with nails? Kadesh lote karka ochalto. In other words, by putting nails all over the shoe, it would sort of lift up the shoe, and the sole of the shoe would be protected from the ground, from various stones and so forth, thorns. Mutter, again, it's a change, and it makes it into a much more sophisticated shoe. And it's not included in the gzeira. I mean, this is really breaking new ground, because here he's not beautifying the shoe necessarily. He's just making it more protective from the ground. But nevertheless, it's different than the classic sandal misumar. Tanya Kavose, to Rav Sheshes, we have a brisa to support. Rav Sheshes, lo yetze or ish besandal on misumar. You're not allowed to wear the shoe on Shabbos. V'lo yital mi bias lebias. He's not even allowed to go from one house to the other with this shoe on. Afilu mi mito lemito. Even if he walks from one part of his room to the other, from one bed to the other. And all this is going to make him depressed, because he's going to, once he puts his shoe on, he's going to remember the terrible incident. But it's not mukt on Shabbos. It has a function. He could use it to cover something. Or lismo po karia mita. They used to put some support under the legs of the bed, and he's allowed to use this very hard shoe as a support. Rabbi Elezer of Shimon Oser, According to Rabbi Eliezer, we have a muktzah problem here, because this shoe was made specifically for wearing on the feet, and we're not allowed to wear it on the feet, and we don't expect to use it for any other function. Nashru rov masmei rosov. If, let's say, most of the nails fell out, they got loose and they fell out from the shoe, v'nishtayer bo arba o chamesh, and he's left with only four or five nails, is mutter. Interesting. This shoe was created for a functional purposes with many nails. But once the nails fell out, now it takes on a different status. It's no longer similar to the original sandal that was prohibited. Therefore, it's mutter. Rebbe Matir Ad Sheva. Rebbe says that even if the nails fell out and you're left with seven, again, it's a big problem because Rebbe before said 13. Here he says seven. If he covers the sole with leather, or alternately, kavalo masmeros milamala, he attaches nails to the upper section of the shoe. All these are called shinui, and they change the shoe, and it's mutter. Asan kamin klavus. Remember, we had those very fancy nails that look like tongs. O kamin tas, or the heads of the nails look like a bar. O kamin yosed, or it looks like a stake. All these cases, ochipo kulav masmeros, kadesh lo te karko chloso, and this would support Rav Sheshes, that even if he covered the entire sole with nails in order to protect him from the ground, in all these cases it's mutter. The Gemara says, hagufa kasha, there's a inner difficulty in the braisa, amrit nashru rov masmerosov, you're telling me that even though most of the nails fell out, he still has a bunch of nails that are left, and he's allowed to wear this sandal. Is v'hadar tani arbo chamesh in tfeilo? Then the Brisa tells us that only if he has four or five nails left, but if he has more than four or five nails left, and it still looks like the original sandal, and it's awesome. Omer of sheishes lo kasha kan shenigmemu. Kan shenekru. When the Brisa says that even if there are many nails that are left, and it has more than half of the nails, and the nails were worn down, and now the nails are completely level with the sole, you don't even see the nails anymore, they're not obvious, they're not apparent to the eye, that's mutter. But kan shenekru, but the Brisa prohibits if a certain number of nails are there, that's a case where the nails are still visible. Actually, it could go the other way around as well. Nigmamu means the nails are still hanging on, so to speak, so you still see the nails. Nekru, I correct myself, nekru means that the nails were completely removed, and therefore it doesn't look like the original sandal. Arba o chamesh mutter. Okay, we'll add one more minute. Hashto chamesh shari arba mi boy. If you're allowed to wear this shoe, if there are five nails, and that really looks like it's the original shoe, is why did you have to tell me four nails are left? Amar Rav Chisda, arba mi sandal katan, v'chamesh mi sandal gadol. Which means that when the Brisa says there are four remaining, that's from a small sandal, and therefore the original sandal had less nails. But in the case of a sandal gadol, a larger sandal, then if five remain, then it's considered something different than the original shoe because most of the nails have fallen off. The next Gemara is a stira between the two statements of Rebbe, whether Rebbe allows seven nails or 13 nails, and the Gemara is going to try to reconcile that stira. So we're going to stop here now on Daf Samach Amid Beis, and we're up to the Rebbe Matir Ad Sheva, 1, 2, 3, 4.